This is the Drive Podcast with Josh Graham.
Now you're talking my language.
You can hear the Drive weekday afternoons 3 till 6 on WSJS.
You are on a busy Thursday drive. It is WSJS. News Talk Sports for the Triad, where after a 2.5 hour delay this morning, the Masters is officially underway at Augusta National, and shortly after they teed it off, we learned of the passing of O.J. Simpson. That's led to, shall we say, an interesting day on social media and looking at sports coverage. However, golf and the juice can wait because Kentucky is still without a basketball coach, and they are a couple more no's away from national humiliation during this hiring cycle, which, personally, given how pleasant that fan base can be, you really hate to see. Scott Drew became at least the second coach to turn down the Cats. Alabama's Nate Oates removed his name from consideration. UConn's Danny Hurley, according to reports, is now the focus today for Mitch Barnhart, Kentucky AD. Do I need to remind you how he responded to being asked about the Kentucky opening after cutting down nets on Monday? Yeah, that guy's not taking the Kentucky job. He literally laughed in the face of the question. So that's not going to work out. Those are three guys saying no. Remember when Kentucky came open and the reaction by many were, this is just like Nick Saban leaving Alabama, and this is Kentucky basketball is like Alabama football. Where was that memo to the guys who were being offered this job? Last I checked, Alabama wasn't having to go to their second list of candidates to find their guy. Kentucky had a Final Four coach tell them no. Alabama got a coach in the national championship game to say yes in Kalen DeBoer. Alabama wins national championships in football and hasn't had bad years in the last five seasons. Kentucky hasn't been to the Final Four since 2015, has not won a title in the last 10 years, and their last 5 years has not escaped the first weekend of the tournament. That comparison, pretty bad, and I think that this week has made that evident. There does seem to be one more name on the first page of candidates for Kentucky. That is Chicago Bulls coach Billy Donovan. He's expected to be the next focus for them. Here's the problem, though. The Bulls, which he coaches in the NBA, ninth in the Eastern Conference standings right now, they will play in the play-in tournament next week. So that presents two questions. Number one, is Kentucky willing to wait a week for Billy Donovan without knowing how interested Billy Donovan is? It could be more than that if they make it into the tournament as the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Secondarily, would Billy Donovan be willing to come back to college? He did spend 5 years there as an assistant. You probably have a better shot at winning a national championship or a championship of any kind at Kentucky versus with the Chicago Bulls, but those are two questions that need to be answered. If Billy Donovan says no thanks, Kentucky's going to have to go to their second list of candidates, and that's where you get to BYU coach Mark Price. That's where you get to, or Mark Pope, excuse me. Don't know why. Mark Price, ACC legend, came to mind. Shout out to Georgia Tech.
Have a great day and go ACC.
Thank you for that. Sean Miller's on that second list. That actually wouldn't be that bad. Still don't see anybody among the major reporters, Matt Norlander, Jeff Goodman, bringing up Patino's name. He should be getting more serious consideration. The age shouldn't be that much of a deterrent, but it doesn't seem that they're taking that all that seriously. Kentucky is in a tough spot right now. They are a couple more no's away from national humiliation. It won't just be Danny Hurley that's laughing at Kentucky anymore. The rest of the country... What was that? The rest of the country might be singing the same tune very soon. In addition to airing across WSJS's fleet of stations, we are streaming video on YouTube, Twitch, and X. Will Dalton.
Hello, friends.
I didn't know if we were going to do this again.
It's a beautiful day out on the golf course.
You're not a golf guy. You don't know how to pronounce any of these guys' names. You didn't even know Waco, Texas was a place until yesterday where Scott Drew turned down Kentucky.
Yeah. As we get into the first day of the Masters, Ryan Fox leads the way.
What is that?
Five down.
I feel like you. I have no idea what a Ryan Fox is. Five down?
He's
we're doing this again?
He's five down. Bryson DeChambeau is three down behind him.
Glad that.
Tied with Byung Hun An. That. Then you got some tee times coming up here because they had some weather earlier, so some things got pushed back. Bubba Watson just teed off. Patrick Reed's about to tee off in about 10 minutes. Tiger Woods in less than an hour. It's a beautiful day on the golf course.
You can't say it's a beautiful day on the golf course when there's a 2.5 hour weather delay. It looks fine now, but
yeah.
Come on, what are we doing? Just completely useless, all of that. From
being
Will
positive.
Dalton, the executive producer of this show, facilitating it all, taking your calls at 336-777-1600. Getting to the Panthers. For the first time since going on the head coaching interview circuit, before ultimately returning for another season as Carolina Panthers DC, Ejiro Evero met with the media today. And man, is he polished. If his football resume doesn't scream head coaching material enough, which it does, by the way he carries himself sure does. You might as well consider this season Ejiro Evero's head coaching interview, his final test to finally getting one of the 32 jobs. Because Dave Canales has essentially referred to EJ as being the assistant head coach of this team. He's viewed, and the way he pitched it to EJ was that we are a two-headed brain trust here. We are a tandem, so to speak. You have the defense, I have the offense. He kept his entire defensive staff. Canales didn't touch a piece of that. Here was Evero today on Dave Canales' pitch leading to him returning.
When he first got hired, we had great dialogue about just the vision of the team. And once we kind of just got together and had shared thoughts and talked through some things, it felt like the right fit.
This is much different than last year's dynamic. Frank Reich was very much the head coach, hiring two younger coordinators. There was infighting on the offensive side. EJ kept it together defensively, but then Frank Reich was fired and Chris Tabor became the head coach. It was described as being the Hunger Games behind the scenes. Different dynamic this time. If this defense finishes top five in total defense, as it did this past year amid the horrific offense and all the injuries that the Panthers had, it'll be an even greater achievement than what he did last season. Considering Brian Burns is no longer around, or Frankie Louvu, or Dante Jackson. Jadeveon Clowney, it's a nice add, DJ Wonnum too, but that's not an upgrade when it comes to rushing the passer from having Brian Burns and to a degree Frankie Louvu. And we still don't know today, while Jordan Fuller is a nice add for the back end of the secondary, we still don't know who's going to line up across from J.C. Horn since we don't have Dante Jackson around anymore.
Send me that cash out, family.
Is that going to be Dane Jackson stepping in there, or would they prefer that he be more of a nickel? We don't know. Evero, if he can figure that out and this still be a top five defense, not only should the Panthers be pretty good, but he should be an NFL head coach. And he's already carrying himself as such. He had an opening statement for his comments today. He remembered reporters' names when they were called on. He was very polished. And this is a guy, again, the last two cycles has interviewed for head coaching jobs. here he was on that process of being interviewed before ultimately returning to Charlotte.
You know, obviously there's a lot that goes on at that time of the year. I'm very grateful and thankful for the opportunities that I got to interview for these head coaching jobs, and I don't take those lightly. And I know that those are things that are a blessing. Coming back here was I'm very fortunate that Dave and Dan and Mr. Tepper gave me this opportunity to come back here. Again, like, these positions are so highly coveted, and it's an honor to be a NFL defensive coordinator.
I wouldn't rule it out, Carolina's defense being better than last year. Continuity on the coaching staff has to mean something for the returning players. This is the first time Derrick Brown has had the same position coach for consecutive years, and the entire defensive staff back. That's important. So while you lose Brian Burns and Frankie Louvu, Burns was not great as a run stopper. Jadeveon Clowney, in addition to rushing the passer, not as well as Burns does, but still pretty good at it. A much better run defender. And DJ Wonnum is good at that. And you bring in, I think it was Armstrong that they brought in as well in the middle of that defensive line that should be a pretty good run stopper too. They could be better in that area if you sign Stephon Gilmore, who Jadeveon Clowney has been lobbying, and Ejiro Evero even spoke on saying, yeah, that'd be great. Then you feel pretty good about corner. Then you could start talking about maybe this defense could be even better than it was a year ago. Still not quite there yet, which means if they remain a top five defense, or even top 10 in that matter, Ejiro Evero should be an NFL head coach. This year is almost like a dress rehearsal, an audition, if you will, from last year where he was not seen as being that assistant head coach the way that he is in Dave Canales' organization.
This is it. You ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it, do it.
All right, listen up.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
So glad to have you on this busy Thursday drive. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where after a 2.5 hour delay this morning, the Masters officially underway. And shortly after they teed it off, we learned of O.J. Simpson's passing. That's led to, shall we say, an interesting day on social media and with sports media coverage. However, golf and the juice can wait because Kentucky is still without a basketball coach, and they are one more no away, one more no thank you away from national humiliation territory during this hiring cycle, which personally, given how pleasant that fan base can be, you really hate to see. Scott Drew became the second coach to turn down the Cats. Danny Hurley soon became the third, even though he pretty much turned down Kentucky on Monday, wins the national championship, and during the press conference, he was asked about potential openings, and he didn't have to say anything more than this for us to know how he felt about the Kentucky job. Apparently, that offer was 8 years $100 million. He laughed in the face of that. Alabama's Nate Oates put out a statement saying that he's going to stay at with the Tide after making it to the Final Four. So who is Kentucky going to hire? Some compared the Kentucky basketball job to Alabama football. It's not that. If it were, Nate Oates is taking the Kentucky job, just like Kalen DeBoer makes the college football playoff, makes the national championship, and yeah, Alabama, I'm going to take that gig. Alabama's won something in the last decade. Kentucky hasn't even made the Final Four since 2015 and hasn't escaped the first weekend in the last 5 years. It's just not the same thing, but some made it out to be as if they were. Now the target's going to be Chicago Bulls coach Billy Donovan. He's expected to be the next big target, and here's the problem with that. The Bulls are ninth in the Eastern Conference standings currently. They will play in the play-in tournament next week. So two questions come out of this. Number one, is Kentucky willing to wait a week for Billy Donovan if they don't know if he's going to take the job? Maybe even wait more than that, depending on if they win enough to get the number eight spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And would Billy Donovan be willing to come back to college, where he was really good, winning national championships, and once was an assistant at Kentucky for 4 or 5 years? Those are questions that need to be answered. But if it's not Billy Donovan, if Billy Donovan says no thanks as well, Kentucky's going to have to go on their second list of candidates. That's where you find BYU's Mark Pope. It's where you find Sean Miller. That actually wouldn't be that bad of a hire. I don't know if Rick Pitino's on that list. He should be, because if you could be president at 81 and 78, respectively, you could be a basketball coach at 71 if you're good enough for the job. And I think Rick Pitino is, and he's already a legend there. So Kentucky, they're one more no away from really being embarrassed and having to go back to the drawing board. 336-777-1600 if you want in. Let's go to Mark in Greensboro. Once in on this. Mark, you got no's for Danny Hurley and Scott Drew to Kentucky. How should Kentucky feel about this?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. Anytime Kentucky gets their face ripped in whatever we want to call it here, they get taken down. It always makes you laugh. From what I've heard, Josh,
I'm not laughing today. I hate it for Kentucky. I feel so bad for them. I only hope the best things. And I'm grieving the loss of O.J. Simpson today, too. It's just been a really tough day altogether.
Yeah. Well, my thoughts and prayers go out to you, but I know you're being sarcastic. So I will tell you that what I heard about the Dan Hurley stuff is he not only turned them down once, he turned them down three times, because the initial offer was 6 years. $77 million. He said no.
To that he said no, and then he also added a snicker in there. And then the second offer was what?
Was 8 years, 90.
Danny Hurley's response to that was and then
8 years, 100.
Yeah. Your guy.
So that's my guy, and they can't have him. Honestly, they already are embarrassing themselves. I mean, one of my friends who runs a pretty big X account for UConn, he put up a poll that said who put up a bigger fight this weekend, Purdue or Kentucky? And right now Purdue is winning the vote wholeheartedly. So, yeah, you come at the king, you better not miss. And I think it's hysterical that they think that they have a great job when their Rupp Arena is essentially in a mall.
Boom.
And that's a dump. So,
you know who else is laughing at the hysterical nature of all of this? Oh, wait. That's right. It's Danny Hurley again. Thank you, Mark in Greensboro. It's good to hear from you. Can we get to Ejiro Evero? He was polished today. Oh. I guess we can't get to Ejiro Evero.
Back out at the Masters.
What's happening?
On hole 14, Rory McIlroy just converted a lengthy birdie to reach 2 under par.
Wow, okay, Rory. That's actually useful. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's moving up a little bit, but who's really moving up in the field, Will Zalatoris, is 4 under par right now.
Hashtag Prodeeks.
That's right. Bryson DeChambeau staying locked in. He's finished his day at 7 under par. Apparently his iron shots are on point and consistent.
Where are you reading this?
Twitter.
His iron shot. This is now golf analysis? You struggle to read the leaderboard, and now you're telling me how consistent his golf shots
I'm
look?
I'm doing my research over here.
You were doing pretty well until that.
Tiger Woods birdied his first hole of the day. That was pretty cool to see. He's still pretty low on the board, though.
He's
at 29.
It's on the front nine.
Yeah.
It's all about making the cut, WD. That's all it's about.
It's true. And Jason Day still hasn't flown away in his baggy pants.
Thank you for that. Ejiro Evero. This year feels like his audition, his dress rehearsal, if you will, for a head coaching job. Because he's essentially the assistant head coach for this team. Dave Canales referred to EJ and him as being a tandem during his introductory press conference. Here was Evero on Canales and his pitch to EJ.
When he first got hired, we had great dialogue about just the vision of the team. And once we kind of just got together and had shared thoughts and talked through some things, it felt like the right fit.
If this defense finishes top five in total defense again, as it did a year ago, it'll be an even greater achievement than what he just did. And it was a remarkable achievement that they already did that, given how little help they got offensively. They lost Brian Burns. They lost Frankie Louvu. They lost Dante Jackson. Jadeveon Clowney and DJ Wonnum doesn't really feel like an upgrade when it comes to rushing the quarterback, but maybe an upgrade when it comes to run stopping. They added some dudes in the middle of this D-line to help with that too. But the problem is you don't still know who's going to line up across from J.C. Horn.
Send me that cash out, fam.
It's going to be Dane Jackson. Are you going to find Stephon Gilmore? What's the answer there? We still don't quite know that yet. And Everell, if the stats themselves didn't already say that he looked like an NFL head coach, NFL head coaching material, he carries himself like a head coach. The last two cycles, he's interviewed for head coaching jobs. And he had an opening statement for his presser today. He remembered the names of reporters he interviewed, again, for several jobs already. Here he was on that process. Because, again, this is the first time we've heard from him since he interviewed for those jobs.
You know, obviously there's a lot that goes on at that time of the year. I'm very grateful and thankful for the opportunities that I got to interview for these head coaching jobs, and I don't take those lightly. And I know that those are things that are a blessing. Coming back here was, I'm very fortunate that Dave and Dan and Mr. Tepper gave me this opportunity to come back here. Again, like, these positions are so highly coveted, and it's an honor to be an NFL defensive coordinator.
You know you're really good at carrying yourself in the media when you say a bunch of words that don't mean much. He's got that down to a science. Dave Canales has not figured that out yet because he still says interesting things. I wonder when that gets beaten out of him.
I hope it doesn't.
I hope it doesn't either, but that's just how this works.
I really hope it doesn't. Like, I'd like him to be himself.
Sure, you can be yourself, just not in front of the media.
Hmm.
That's because they're not rewarded for it, ever. It only results in bad things, sadly, because people will crush them when they say honest things. Why would you say that? Because it's the truth. Why would you do something as stupid as saying the truth? Don't you know that we can hear you? Well, then you disincentivize it. The good
Boo
example,
this man, please, somebody.
The perfect example of that would be during basketball season, where after the Virginia Wake game, Steve Forbes says, yeah, Cam Hildreth shouldn't have brought the ball up. It was a mistake that he did that. Well, you threw him under the bus. You also told the truth. We didn't rip him because we appreciate honesty around here, but is it the smartest thing to do that when then a bunch of people come at Cam Hildreth? Probably not. And Forbes apologized for that. That's a good example of you got to be milquetoast to a degree. Disinteresting. Not very quotable to do the job well, and sometimes you got to flat out lie. Sadly, it's part of the job. This time of year especially, the draft's coming up. So you have all the smoke screens and things of that nature. I am very interested in grammar school, always am. I'm interested in BDOT's view on North Carolina's roster construction. They're talking to a Kentucky guy, Bradshaw, the center, based on some of the reports out there. I have no idea what Dot's going to say about O.J. Simpson, who passed away today. Big news as well. We'll figure all that out together and give away some tickets too in grammar school when Dot joins us next.
From the Augusta National Golf Club, Westwood One Sports presents this special report on the Masters. I'm Ted Emrick. 1 year ago, Will Zalatoris had to withdraw from the Masters the morning of the first round because of injury. Not long after, he underwent back surgery and missed the rest of the season. Zalatoris is back, now using a broomstick putter, and it's been a godsend for 3-foot putts like he had at 15.
This is the range that he struggles from. He's got a long putter now, not anchored, but up near his chest, left edge, and it curls in. That putter has been the answer for Will Zalatoris in this comeback from back surgery. Birdie here at 15, and Zalatoris is now 4 under.
Brian Katrick, the call on SiriusXM. Zalatoris has been a runner-up at three different majors in his career, including here in 2021. Just got to be careful anytime a patron gives him a hug. But the back is holding up so far. Zalatoris tied for second with Danny Willett and Scotty Scheffler. They're four under, three back of Bryson DeChambeau, who is seven under and in the clubhouse. You're listening to coverage of the 2024 Masters on Westwood One.
Todd is a real Prevagen user, and this is his story.
Hi, I'm Todd, and I live in Georgia. I'm a veteran of 23 years. I love to give back to the community, whether it's my fellow veterans, some guy on the street corner. I offer what I can, when I can. I started noticing that my memory was slipping, and I wanted to take proactive measures to try to help that. I saw a Prevagen commercial, and I did some research on it, and I wanted to find out, does this stuff really work? I started taking Prevagen about 3 years ago. Since taking Prevagen, I feel clearer in my thoughts, my memory has improved, and generally just more on point.
Prevagen is available in stores everywhere without a prescription. Based on a clinical study of subgroups of individuals who are cognitively normal or mildly impaired, this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Testimonialist was compensated for their time.
Bryson DeChambeau posting the score to beat as we wind through the first round at the Masters. Let's check the leaderboard, sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists. DeChambeau, a 7-under 65, 8 birdies, 1 bogey today for the 2020 U.S. Open champion. DeChambeau with a 3-shot advantage over Danny Willett, 2016 Masters champ, Will Zalatoris, and Scotty Scheffler, the 2022 Masters champion. Zalatoris now through 16 holes after a par there. Scheffler is through 14. At 3-under par, Ryan Fox, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Matthew Pavon from France. Pavon, one of the last few players to tee off, he's through 6 holes. Tiger Woods even through 4 after a bogey at number 4. He opened with a birdie. From Augusta, I'm Ted Emrick, Westwood One Sports.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
I don't know if I've told this story yet. BDOT, six-man of Tar Heel basketball, joining us. In D.C., I felt like I was one of those narrators on a National Geographic show. When Dot and I were standing in one of the hallways and a small man was walking with one of those briefcases towards the court and a red pullover. And I said to Dot, do you know who that is? And he said, no, who is it? I said, that's Tony Haynes. And your face just, it completely lit up.
Let's go to the sidelines, Tony Haynes.
And then you met Gary Hahn as well. And that was very exciting as well.
What a run for Gary Hahn, no?
Yeah, gets to the Final Four, and what a way to close his career in ACC Championship the first time he ever called it. The reason I tell that story is, what a segue to this question. How does O.J. Simpson's death hit you today, Dot?
What a segue. What type of segue was that?
Because whatever your answer is going to be, it probably is going to be followed by that.
Tony Haynes.
Nah, man, like, I was shocked as everyone else. I didn't know that the Juice was battling cancer. I never knew that. Only his friends and close friends and family knew that. I've been listening to a lot about Juice today, man, and I agree with the sentiments that the Juice before 1994 is different from the Juice after. Like, anybody rushed for 2,000 yards in 14 games, dog. Like, that's 150 yards a game, Josh. Like, Juice was nice. Juice was in Naked Gun movies. He made us laugh. Like, I remember that. And then I remember being in St. Louis, Missouri, at my Uncle Rodney, bless his soul's house, and we're watching the freaking NBA. Was it the Eastern Conference Finals? Was it the Heat and the Knicks?
No, it was the NBA Finals. It was the Rockets and the Knicks.
The Rockets and the Knicks, the finals. And we're sitting there watching. I remember sitting in his living room watching it, and they're cutting it to O.J. Simpson. And we're like, what? Like to try to put it in perspective, it's like a superstar athlete of this time, Emmitt Smith or something. We're watching TV and we hear that Emmitt Smith is on the run because his freaking wife and boyfriend were murdered.
No, I feel it'd be like today if it were Travis Kelce. Like, oh, this guy's a great athlete. He's in every commercial. This guy's like a star. Oh, and by the way, now he's, well, it'd be a little bit different if he was accused of murdering his significant other. Where's the Gary? Let's go to the sidelines, Stoney Haynes. I don't think anybody would be on Travis Kelce's side whatsoever if that were the situation. That's where the analogy falls apart.
Agreed 100%. But either way, though, like, it, you know, as far as the NFL is concerned, solely sports, right? Like, the NFL lost an icon today in the idea that O.J. Simpson did things that had never been done and will never be done because the game is more than 14 games now. But, you know, it's the juice, man. Like, you know, he was a killer on the field, and some say he was a killer off the field.
Allegedly. He gets – it was one of the best jokes, we'll call it, on social media that, you know, maybe O.J. can ask the – ask the good Lord who Nicole Brown Simpson's murderer was now and figure out who exactly that was. Oh, my God is right.
How about we just quit?
Let's go to the sidelines. Tony Haynes.
Okay. Let's talk Tar Heels. You and I disagree on something. You think R.J. Davis is returning. I don't think he is. Let's present this like an O.J.-style court case. What is your case for R.J. Davis coming back?
R.J. Davis received so many accolades this season, some that he dreamed of, some that he didn't even think about getting. He's one of the Naismith Players of the Year. He's got the Cousy Award. He's ACC Player of the Year. He just set records as far as three-pointing his shooting. But the way he ended the last game, the most important game of his season, going 0-for-9 from 3-point, like arguably one of the reasons. Now, there are a lot of different reasons why you lose the game, but arguably one of the key ingredients for us not getting over that threshold and sitting with that all summer, I think that is enough of a disgusting taste in RJ's mouth, pause, to bring him back next season. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. He could go and chase that bag. And if he does so, I wouldn't have any problems with that. However, I feel like he could also get said bag staying in college for another year, a la Mondo, a la Burns. Stay, get you another year, and chase that thing again.
The difference between those two, though, and RJ is this. RJ is getting drafted this year if he declares for the draft. When you're the ACC Player of the Year, when you're a first-team All-American, when you could shoot the three like he is, he is not getting drafted a year from now. The reason why you're getting drafted this year is you're a year younger than you'd be a year from now, and this is not a good draft. Next year's draft is going to be absolutely jam-packed, loaded. It's the type of draft that people will be tanking just to have a high draft pick in. And on top of that, he's done pretty much everything you can do, man. I mean, you've went to a Final Four, you won an ACC championship, your name's going to go up in the rafters. And also, like, these college kids now, that room's going to be very young, and you're going to be the old guy in it, and it's going to be a congested backcourt with Ian Jackson and Elliot Cadell. I saw, like, his longtime girlfriend, Deja Kelly. She's entering the transfer portal, so she's going to be leaving Chapel Hill, too. The signs and the writing on the wall to me just says it's time to go. It's just time.
No, that's a very good point, Josh, and I can't argue much of that. And if he did leave, as I said, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that, especially, like you pointed out, with it being a lighter draft this year versus next. However, just the dog that I know, mm-hmm, and the guy that the guy, how I know that, or not how I know, but how I would like to feel, I know that he would like to be remembered as a Tar Heel. That last game is not the way that he would want his script to be ended.
If it does end like that, this is my immediate reaction to that game, that R.J. Davis and Caleb Love are almost like Romeo and Juliet type figures, where one guy on that court shoots 0-for-9 from 3, and then R.J. says, "Oh, Romeo, thou Romeo," and shoots 0-for-9 from 3 as well. Just, you know, connected.
You really players can't draw it up any better than that or any worse than that, depending on which side you stand on. But that was just insane.
It's a tragic tale. That's what it is. It's sad. We all left crying. CBS executives, too. Let's get to grammar school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking. And just when you think it can't get any worse, Josh is going to attempt to learn B-Dot's vernacular.
I'm
going to
put one in the air.
It's time for B-Dot's Grammar School.
Nobody better than B-Dot. Pre-game, during game, post-game.
Brought to you by Heritage Hardwood Floors. When it comes to flooring, they have no ceiling.
At Heritage Hardwood Floors!
Shout out to those guys. HeritageHardwoodFloors.com. I have a Callcastic question to get us started.
Where are people at in the comments, yo? Talk to us in the chat, yo.
Yeah, talk to us in the chat. Just don't give me spoilers to some of these questions.
Yeah, the same for Dot here, too.
I don't know if you know this, but the Masters is going on. And
yeah, you know I don't like that. I've known you for a while. You know I don't like anything called the Masters.
That's fair. You also don't like golf, which is why I'm interested if you could tell me one of two things.
Come on, man. Don't do this.
Other than Tiger, can you name two golfers? If not, I have a second question that you could potentially try.
Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholas.
Here's Johnny.
Jack Nicholas. That wasn't my final answer. Jack Nicholas.
Okay. I meant current, but I didn't say that. There you go.
And Arnold Palmer.
Hey! As a bonus, can you tell me the name of the town that the Masters is played at every year? The city.
Augusta. Augusta, Georgia.
There you go.
Yeah. I got family down there in Augusta, Georgia. They get the Masters and they get the Peach Jam.
Yeah, crushed it, Dot did there. That's a very good job on your part. What do you have for me?
All right, so Josh, listen, man. You know, like, I've been thinking.
Yeah.
I've been giving you words, and that's cool.
You haven't given me words in forever, man. You've just been giving me acronyms, and I've been drowning.
Absolutely. So we're going to step outside of that box, but we're going to put words in motion, Josh Graham. We're going to put phrases, okay? Because you hear these phrases, and I need to know that you're understanding more than just a word now. We've been doing this for 3-4 years. Are you understanding the phrases when the words are in motion? Are you ready?
Yeah.
If someone tells you, Josh, they're sitting 28 inches in the air, what are they telling you, Josh?
28. Is the number important?
Yeah, pretty important.
336-777-1600. We have Little Big Town / Sugarland tickets. They're performing together in September. I'm sure Dot knows who either of those acts are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sugarland, Baby Girl, great song by them. Pontoon, I'm sure you're rocking to that. Little Big Town.
Was listening to that on the way over here to the house. Had the daughter in the back singing back up.
Boondocks. That's probably one that you're rocking on the reg.
On the reg. On the reg.
336.
Why wouldn't I be rocking that one on the reg, Josh?
777-1600. I'm just saying, if so, just for the attempt, you can we'll give you a pair of tickets to see that. Who am I going to here,
Aaron
WD?
Aaron in Greensboro.
Aaron, can you tell me what it means when someone says that they're 28 inches off the ground?
No, they're sitting 28 inches in the air. Sitting 28 inches in the air.
My apologies. Can you help me on this, Aaron?
All I can think of is a vertical jump.
Vertical jump. Okay. Enjoy going to Little Big, what is it again? Oh, Sugarland and Little Big Town.
Little Big Planet.
I actually do like both of those acts. It's not a bit. I was going to say that somebody is, when in doubt, WD?
Drugs or guns.
Somebody's high. 28 inches in the air.
All right, that is incorrect.
No!
Everybody. 28 inches in the air means their car has 28-inch rims, Josh Graham.
Oh! 28-inch rims. I should know that because my car is 28 inches in the air. Should know that.
Up next,
Oh.
Up next. If the guy says he jumped off the PJ with bags, what does that mean, Josh Brown? He jumped off the PJ with bags.
So I know PJ to be one of two things. PJ could be like a type of mixed beverage that you enjoy at a party, or it could just mean, as I've heard a number of Wake Forest students say, it could mean just a private plane. Jumped off the PJ with bags. So if you have bags with you, I'm going to say that somebody is... Ask me the question again. How did you frame the question?
I jumped off the PJ with bags.
Not a question. Just what does that mean? Or is it somebody says they jumped off the PJ? I just need some context here.
So you would say, Doc, where are you coming from? I would say, I just jumped off the PJ with bags.
Okay. I'm going to say that somebody is coming off a flight. But why would you have why would the bags piece be important? Do you know this one?
I was on the phone. What was the question?
Jumped off the PJ with bags.
Jumped off the
That's... And the way Dot's reacting to this is... I'm going to get clowned on social media.
No. It's just great to hear you say it. You said it exactly right. Jumped off the PJ with bags.
With bags.
What's the PJ?
That's what we're trying to figure out. I think it might be like a beverage or a plane. I'm going to say it's just somebody had just had a long flight and they're coming back. And I'm wrong.
I wish you would have fought more for this, Josh, because you could have gotten there.
Okay.
Of course you're wrong.
Sure, yeah. Give me the X.
Yes, there we go. It's jumped off the PJ, the private jet.
Yeah.
Huh.
With bags, money.
Oh, see, I almost got there because it's like you have a ton of money. But the context threw me off where it's like,
where you coming from? Jumped off the PJ with bags, baby.
But what context would someone ever say that?
You will hear that. You may be in a room with somebody and you're in there with 2 Chainz or something, and 2 Chainz said, man, I just jumped off the PJ with bags.
What is he saying there? He's just saying that he's on a flight and has money?
And has stats.
Yes, he just got off of a private jet. Have you ever flown on a private jet?
Yes.
No, you haven't. You fly commercial.
No, I've flown several times.
On a private jet?
Who are you talking to here?
Nevertheless, you jumped off the PJ and you got bags. You got your bread.
Okay.
Big shout out to Jay Austin Carter in the chat. Got the answer without getting the answer. Here's the last one, Josh Brown.
What do we got?
Gosh, I don't feel good about this, though.
All right. I don't want to go winless.
All right. So listen to me, okay? If he says left wrist is bling blow, neck piece on frizzle, baby. Left wrist on bling blow.
Bling blow.
Neck piece on frizzle, baby.
Frizzle. And you're asking me which one means both of them?
No, I'm asking you, what does that sentence mean? What is he saying? What is he doing? What does he have on?
He's got jewelry on.
Okay, but what is it? What's the jewelry?
Okay, so he's got a very nice watch, like a Rolex, like a Rolly.
Okay.
And he's got a big chain on because he's iced out. It's like frizzle.
Give him a, that's it. That is correct.
There you go.
That is correct. Left wrist on bling blow. That means bling blow. He got diamonds on the left wrist.
Yeah.
Left wrist on bling blow. Neck piece on frizzle, baby. Neck piece froze. Nothing but diamonds on the neck piece.
Do you have a neck piece that's frizzle?
Absolutely.
What is it of? What's it say?
I mean, it's just, you know, it's a Cuban. It's a Cuban on Cuban, like glow.
Huh.
Do you understand what that meant?
Totally. I'll explain it to you at the little big town show with Sugarland.
Right. Say less.
And We'll hang out. Oh, wait, we gave away our last pair of tickets. I don't know if we'll be going.
Whoops. Whoa, well.
Oh, gosh darn it, Josh.
What a shame.
B-Dot, love you, bro. It's good to
love
see
y'all,
you.
Bro.
We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Hopefully.
We must talk.
Go ahead.
Talk back to the drive with Josh Graham.
Don't lose your job making jokes about O.J. Simpson on social media. It's not worth it. Just sending that out to whoever needs to hear that today. Chip Patterson going to join us 15 minutes from now. O.J., dead at 76, succumbing to cancer. This is as far as I'm willing to go, and I think it's pretty far, in capturing O.J. Simpson's place and American culture. Nobody in public American life crossed as many boundaries as O.J. Simpson did in terms of relevance, in terms of significance. Don't take that as a positive connotation, of course. Significance can be a negative significance as well, certainly. But nobody crossed as many boundaries as O.J. did. He was one of our country's greatest performers. And America is the entertainment capital of the world. He rushed for 2,000 yards in a 14-game season. First player to ever rush for 2,000 yards in a season. He won the Heisman Trophy at USC. Then he became an actor, obviously in The Naked Gun. A broadcaster. He was one of the greatest pitchmen on television, the Hertz ads and him running through the airport or whatever. Before 1990, everybody knew who O.J. Simpson was. It's very similar. It's hard to really compare his level of fame to somebody else, but it'd be like the way people talk about Travis Kelce. That's O.J. in a sense, before you get to all the other stuff. Again, got to be careful in comparing O.J. to people, but still, from an athletic...
Let's go to the sidelines, Tony Haynes.
Going
to
need that drop today. But from an athletic prowess standpoint, from a celebrity pop culture standpoint, that is a decent modern-day comparison. He then became iconic during the trial of the century. This is where his race became a major part of his identity. Ezra Edelman did a fabulous documentary, maybe the greatest sports documentary of all time, a 10-hour series called O.J. Made in America in 2016. It was so good, it was nominated for an Oscar. That good. Generally does not happen for sports documentaries. And in that documentary, it talked about how he wasn't really relating to Bill Russell or to Jim Brown or to Kareem to talk about issues facing black people. That's not something that mattered to him. He didn't view the line that was so commonly used in the documentary. He wasn't black. He was OJ, right? And then he is accused of the murders of Ron Simpson and his ex-wife. And suddenly, that's when race becomes a major part of his identity. That's when he became a symbol of fighting racism as it relates to treatment from the police. In that documentary, an actual juror in the O.J. trial admitted to acquitting O.J., that being payback for the Rodney King police beatings. So do with that what you will. I just looked over to WD, and he's so uncomfortable right now.
Let's go to the sidelines, Tony Haynes.
My apologies. It's hard to imagine a more significant American life in terms of relevance, resonation, prominence. And again, I don't mean that in a positive connotation. I just mean that in a how much do you resonate? How much How many boundaries did you cross? Just think about what the O.J. Simpson story, what boxes you check in our culture. Sports, movies, crime, television. The case essentially created court TV and reality TV. All of that. Race. Every aspect of our culture. Politics. Integrated into this man's life. And he passed away at 76. Which makes it... he's a difficult figure to talk about. Or at least to talk about in this format where in 5 minutes or so we need to take a commercial break and we need to transition out of things as quickly as possible, it seems like, just to get on to the next.
Let's go to the sidelines, Tony Haynes.
Fine, I'll take that invitation. But your thoughts are welcome on X at WSJS Radio. That's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. The YouTube replies are open as well. I see people saying, hey, Josh, shout out to your Greg Norman shirt. Always dressed for the moment. Yep. Glad somebody noticed. That golf update from WD was horrendous.
No, it wasn't, Jay Austin.
Can agree on that. Useless is the word I would use. Chip Patterson, in addition to WD being a Charlotte Hornets fan, Chip Patterson loves his Charlotte Hornets and probably loved what we saw last night. Last night was likely the last fun moment of this Charlotte Hornets season. If you missed it, the game was a roller coaster. Charlotte fell behind by 18 points in Atlanta, and then Brandon Miller changed the tide with a crazy dunk. Here was Eric Collins' call of that dunk.
Does his golf ball, I guess. He is the all-time record holder in Cleveland. Oh!
What just happened? Brandon Miller happened!
Brandon Miller happened, you guys. The yell that he had on that dunk call, though, was pretty strong. I like just telling the story of what happened in the Hornets game through Eric Collins' highlights. So that dunk turned things around, and the Hornets, they stole the game in the final minute. Atlanta missed a free throw. Brandon Miller hit two free throws, making it a one-point game. Atlanta, 10-second differential between the game clock and shot clock, gets to the rim. The shot doesn't go, leading to this sequence here.
Rolling to the cup, Forrest finds Fernando. No! Miles has got it. Hornets a chance to take the lead. Score the goal! Hornets lead by one. Hum diddly dee.
There you go. Got to throw a hum diddly dee in there. But did Charlotte close it out? 3 seconds to go. Atlanta advancing to half court. This is how the game ended.
Nobody home. Forrest. Blocked! It's over! The Hornets win a ball game!
I love him yelling, nobody home, as somebody is catching the ball at the top of the key.
Nobody home!
This is how Joe Pesci reacted 10 minutes into the movie Home Alone.
Nobody home!
Yeah, this is me trying to workshop other contexts for nobody home. That's it. Can't think of anything. It'll come to me. Just give me a little bit of time. Charlotte's now 20-60 on the year.
Ah!
Two games to go. Oh, I got one. John Calipari's reaction to walking into the Arkansas locker room.
Nobody home!
That's a good one. Yeah, that's, we'll get to that later.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's nobody in here.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got excited for a second looking up at this Masters update. I saw Scheffler at -2, and I thought it was Xander Schauffele. I don't think the X-Man's doing too well right now, boys and girls. Let me check in on my guy to see how he's doing. Xander Schauffele is at +2 on 8. Yeesh.
Not good.
Not good. Hoping that he can turn this one around pretty quickly. Still pretty early on since they pushed things back. We'll get some golf analysis from our buddy Chip Patterson in just a few minutes. But looking at the Eastern Conference standings with a couple of games to go, Charlotte with the win and OKC beating Victor Wembanyama last night, pretty much lock Charlotte into having the fourth worst record in the NBA. That means they'll have a double-digit percentage of getting the number one pick. You just won't have the best odds at getting the number one pick. The bottom three teams get that, and you're not catching how bad Detroit and Washington have been. They are the two worst teams by far, and San Antonio is one game better, or I guess one game worse than Charlotte is at the moment with just two games remaining. But does San Antonio actually have better odds than Charlotte does? You know how we all forecasted last summer? Oh, yeah, San Antonio is going to get the number one pick. Why? Because it's Pop. They're going to give Victor Wembanyama to Pop. Even though San Antonio has better odds, air quotes, than the Hornets do at the number one pick, they're not going to let San Antonio get the number one pick back-to-back years, right?
Send me that cash out, family.
Now, this is Conspiracy Josh coming out versus NPR Josh. I've been told Conspiracy Josh is a lot more fun, but I don't think that San Antonio is going to get the number one pick this year.
Did you see Wimby's new logo?
No.
With Nike? It's an alien head.
You love aliens.
Well, I mean,
you had an alien shirt on that we didn't get a chance to address on the show earlier this week, and then you wore it to the national championship party that we had on Monday night.
Did I wear it that night?
You did.
Oh, yeah, I did.
It's an alien head.
Well, I think it's cool because we all called Wimby the alien, and, you know, he's going with an alien head for his logo. Kind of cool there. I'm a sci-fi guy.
There was a guy who, I forget which player it was, that just had a new shoe that was inspired by Forrest Gump's sneakers.
I didn't see that.
It's a prominent NBA player. Just not coming to mind at the moment. Which makes me just want to react like the... Oh, who was it?
I don't know who...
When he was introduced in Washington, D.C. in front of that crowd... That huge crowd before running into Jenny in the water area. Forrest Gump, as he had his right fist extended. Forrest Gump.
I need to watch that movie again.
Great, great movie. If Kentucky basketball isn't Alabama football, then what are they exactly? We'll discuss with Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, next on The Drive.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, now joining us here. We'll get to today's bets and best bets in just a bit. Chip, really do appreciate the time. Let's start with the most important question of the day. Did OJ do it? I'm just kidding. Let's get to today's golf. I'm looking at the scoreboard right now. Tiger's not going to tee off for another hour. I think the first group just entered the clubhouse. Is anything interesting, good or bad, already jumped out to you? Or given the delayed start, is it too early to find something?
No, I think that two things sort of related to Bryson DeChambeau and his hot start. Number one is historically, and we're not talking about a long, long, long track record, but enough for it to be a respectable sample size. Round ones have not been great for Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson has not been great at the Masters in general. And the narrative and the book on that was that, you know, somebody who is so analytically minded, you know, struggles at a place that requires creativity. But for him to be able to go out and play well, I think that that ducks the trends that we have seen on that. And then number two, it follows up something that, you know, I can't say that I have been able to keep tabs on Bryson as much as, you know, some of the stars in the PGA Tour. It's just not how I'm consuming golf right now. But I have heard, especially in my research leading into the Masters, that, you know, where Bryson is at, you know, it is as, you know, a little bit more, you know, middle of the road and healthy and, you know, not taking 12 protein shakes a day kind of stuff, right? And so it's interesting to be able to hear a buzz leading into Augusta that his physical form and his game are actually pretty strong right now, and then to have him follow it up with better first-round performances than we usually see. I think that you're probably looking at Bryson as a little bit more of a threat, maybe not dramatic adjustment to your, you know, pre-Masters expectations. But, you know, I don't know if you, Josh, you have to do any fantasy golf where you got to pick one from each tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to think about sometimes a golf tournament from that mind where you've got different tiers of golfers. I would say that based on what we saw today, Bryson is playing at least one tier, if not more, above what his projections were coming into the tournament.
He's on 16 and just hit a beautiful shot that landed on the ridge and then rolled within 5 or 6 feet of the pin, looking to go 6 under with a few holes remaining in his first round. Chip Patterson joining us. You are somebody who picks in tiers. Who was your tournament pick? Who did you pick to win the Masters?
I got Brooks Koepka as my pick to win. I think that there's I heard some things from his availability that, you know, really brought to light how this is – you already have someone has decided at this point in their career their only purpose as a professional is to chase major championships. And honestly, with all the, you know, infighting of all the different tours and professional golf, one of my big picture takeaways is maybe that's the way it always has been. Maybe always the only thing that has mattered truly have been the major championships. And then the major championships really decide and define the way that we think about a calendar year in the game of golf. You know, he's talking about how his Masters prep begins in December, right? And so I'm not going to overreact to poor finishes on some of these live tour events the same way that I wouldn't have overreacted if, you know, Brooks Koepka had been kind of checked out of the Cognizant Classic 3 weeks ago. I think that this is a golfer of supreme talent who has played well and arguably well enough to win at a lot of editions of the Masters. And so here in the 88th edition, my pick is that Koepka is going to be able to get it done. I mean, that's no disrespect to any of the other worthy contenders, Scotty's hot streak, John Rahm's ceiling, or, you know, anybody else in the field, but you got to pick somebody. And so I'm lining up with Koepka.
Chip Patterson with us here. You also know him from the Cover 3 podcast. I was thinking about you guys a little bit in the past week because when the Alabama job came open as late in the hiring cycle as it did, it reminded me of the way a lot of people reacted to Kentucky coming open. People saying, oh, Kentucky football. It's like, or Kentucky basketball is a lot like the Alabama football gig. Except when Alabama reached out to the coach making it to the Final Four, to the college football playoff from, you know, Kalen DeBoer. He took the job while Nate Oates said, I'm not all that interested, and we learned Scott Drew has since pulled his name out of the search as well. What have we learned about the Kentucky job, if anything, this week?
No, I wouldn't say much because, when John Calipari was hired, he was John Calipari, but he was also the Memphis coach. You know, you've got Tubby Smith before that. You know, you've got a different line that you can kind of look through in terms of the job is not always going to bring the superstar, rock star hire of the moment. The job is a great job because of the resources and the potential for what it could be. Kentucky still is a program that, because of its history, because of its resources, because of its support, will be able to, almost under any coach, be competitive, and under the right coach, be competitive for national championships. So I'm not adjusting my view of the Kentucky job based on the fact that Nate Oates decided to stick with his previous commitment to Alabama. The fact that Scott Drew, to be honest, really might not be the perfect fit for that job. And I don't mean to say that Scott Drew can't compete for a national championship contending program. He's won a national championship and he has a national championship contending program at Baylor. But, you know, you started to work your way through the list. Matt Norlander just reported within the last hour or so, you know, Danny Hurley said no. And again, like, Danny Hurley staying at UConn is because Danny Hurley is perfect for UConn. Scott Drew staying at Baylor is because Scott Drew is perfect for Baylor. The way he carries himself, the message that he wants to deliver, and the people who need to receive that message, it is perfect at Baylor. Same thing for Hurley at UConn. The Oates thing was interesting. That's probably a sliding doors situation that we'll always go back and say, hey, you know, if Louisville hadn't opened up and offered Oates first, leading to Oates' commitment, does Oates maybe split for the Kentucky job? But that's not the case. It's not the reality we're living in. What I'm interested in is whether Kentucky will get to the man who I'm begging Kentucky
Let's go.
To hire.
Let's go. Let's party. Let's party like it's 1995. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, St. John's head coach Rick Pitino. Please.
Beaumont, your buddy.
That's what I need.
Your buddy, our mutual guy, Beaumonte Jones, tweeted that a lot of people are learning today what social media would have looked like in 1995 with the OJ news. I'm like, well, Kentucky having Rick Pitino as its coach might add to that. As well, I got to ask a football question on the way out, though. And by the way, my producer, Will Dalton, has found sound in the last hour of Danny Hurley's reaction to turning down. This is him turning down the Kentucky job. This was the first sound that he made when Kentucky called asking about the gig earlier today. Yeah, that was him actually answering the question on Monday. I don't know why people seriously thought he might take that job. But here's the football question I have for you, Chip. Now that NC State stuff is over, are you buying Wolfpack football stock for this year? Because that ACC schedule looks pretty easy from afar.
Yeah, I mean, you see that anything less than 6-2 would be a disappointing season based on the way that the transfer portal class, of course, you know, headlined by Grayson McCall at quarterback, but I'd say Noah Rogers at wide receiver, Jordan Waters at running back, a few other players as well. Like, everything seems to be checking out in terms of them doing a good job of their evaluation process and being able to get the right portal additions to fill the holes they need. Like, this to me is the NC State proposition, which I do think exists outside of NC State stuff, because I'm having the same conversation with about the Wolfpack with other people that do not know the history of NC State stuff. They do know that good NC State teams are still falling short of 10-win seasons, and there's still that breakthrough to the next step. So this is a very high floor proposition. Anything less than 6-2 in conference play is probably a disappointment. You would like to be in the mix for a spot in Charlotte, but these things don't happen in a vacuum. Clemson is going to have the best defense in the ACC. If they can get any kind of step forward from Cade Klubnik, given their talent at wide receiver, I don't know if you've seen Bryant Wesco, their early enrollee true freshman, but that guy's a special player. They can get some decent health and some good production at wide receiver, even a half step forward from Cade Klubnik, it's going to make the Tigers awfully hard to beat. Florida State's got DJU, speaking of Clemson, and a bunch of transfer portal talent, including about, no kidding, 6 guys from Alabama that were on last year's SEC championship team. You know, you've got Miami now potentially with its best quarterback in a long time if Cam Ward is able to hit it. So NC State is looking up, I think, and seeing those 3 programs that top to bottom might have a more talented roster. Might. But they've got a little bit of a tougher schedule. A bunch of them have to play games against each other. So you've got NC State firmly within the top 4, top 5 in the ACC. I just think that now the question is, are they going to be able to maintain against a schedule that doesn't have a lot of those teams enough consistency so that you are 8-0, 7-1 at the end of the season?
Chip Patterson, it's good to hear your voice. Next time we chat, we'll be talking about Hornets draft, I'm sure, and looking ahead to the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. Who knows? Maybe the Hornets get the #1 pick. We shall see. But, Chip, appreciate you spending the time.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.